Welcome to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. I'm Pastor Margaret Michael, and I'm so grateful that you've joined us today. And I'm excited about the conversation that we're going to have today around the table. I have a co-host with me today, Micah Branson. Micah, welcome.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here today. And we have, usually it's myself and Grayson, but there's four of us around the table. Grayson's here. We're not going to hear much from him today, but we have some special guests with us today that we're going to get to hear a great story of God's amazing grace and a story of hope. That's why we are Hope Talks, because we love to hear stories that can inspire us to continue to trust God on deeper levels. And so, Micah, I'm going to have you introduce our guests, because I think you might know them a little bit better than I do.
I'm here because of God's connection and people that you can't miss because he puts them in your life and their inspiration. And not to spoil a scripture we're going to use in the future, but there is a scripture that says, you know, it alludes to, you know, do we reflect that we've been in the presence mm-hmm. of Jesus? Yeah. And so these two have done that for me at multiple points along knowing them. This would be Doug and Carrie Galeka across the table from me. Met Carrie first because, quite frankly, West Virginia people find each other. I'm only a half-breed, West Virginia, both grandfathers, but my husband is full-on Hardy County, and Carrie's from the Divide, right where the state line is. And so she was from that community. I believe my mother-in-law taught you in high school.
Yep. Home ec.
She taught everybody for 37 years. Really cool class where you learn life skills. And then Carrie came to work for us because of that connection at Old Dominion and has been an amazing part of our leadership team, managing the financial piece of what we do. It's a huge responsibility,
yes.
And she was very young when she stepped into that role and has grown into it. And then she bought a house and grew up doing that. And then she met somebody across the street. And so that's where Doug enters in. And from day one, he's been an inspiration. So I'm just going to let us go right into getting to know them because they're the important part.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, we know kind of maybe where you were born, but tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up. We'll go back all the way and then talk about your story together.
Let me go first. So I'm actually not from the area. I grew up in Western Maryland, out in the country. Most people think Western Maryland, Hagerstown, no, like another hour up in the sticks, closer to Morgantown, actually. Childhood was just outdoors. I grew up just, I don't ever remember being inside. It was until I had to be when it was dark or even after dark and mom was yelling. It was pretty much go out and you're free reigns, which I'm scared to let Truett do coming up. But just thinking back of everything that I did, like I was outside by myself, pretty much cousins mm-hmm. and friends and stuff in the community. Well, Carrie's been there. It's not really a town. It's in the sticks, but I mean, we have a really close-knit community there that everybody just, I grew up in a community that just helps others. Like, we were always there for each other, whether it was family or just friends. Outdoors, hunting, fishing, working on the farm, baling hay, helping neighbors. And then fast forward to, well, when I was 13 years old, I was in a hunting accident. So that kind of changed my path as far as, I knew I wasn't going to be in any labor field or construction or anything, railroad or anything that my family grew up doing. Mm-hmm. My brother, my grandfather were electricians. My dad's worked for the railroad for 30-some years. So that kind of would, I feel that wiped out those options mm-hmm. for me. So it kind of made my mind switch to never not what I wasn't going to do, just switch like that I wasn't going to do anything. It was just switch my mindset of what I'm going to do. And it kind of switched to electronics and engineering, building computers, getting into that. My uncle helped me get into that and picked that up and decided that when I graduated high school, I was going to go to college for electronics engineering. Went to college and took a while to find, even in that field, to find something accessible or easy that people wanted to take the chance on hiring. There were several jobs I knew I'd be able to do, but they didn't want to take the chance. Mm-hmm. So it was like probably a good year and a half before I received a call for a place in Harrisonburg. Come down for an interview and got the job, and 17 years later or so, I'm still there.
Wow.
And met my neighbor then across the street when she invited me for a monster truck thing here in Harrisonburg that she had won on the radio, and hasn't left my side ever since.
That's amazing.
Literally.
Well, for those, and we'll hear from you next.
Mine isn't nearly as cool.
Yeah, I want to hear from you, childhood, and then for those that are listening, we're sitting in a room with you, Doug, and we can see you in a wheelchair. But for those listening, they don't know that piece.
Yeah.
And so let's hear from you a little bit, and then maybe share, you can come back and share a little bit about that experience, and we'll go from there.
So I grew up in Matthias. I had a pretty, say, normal childhood. I was outside. I had lots of friends riding four-wheelers. I went to a small high school, and then I went to Bridgewater for a year and then transferred to a school in West Virginia, got my associate's degree and my bachelor's degree. And then I worked a few odds and ends kind of jobs, nothing that really, like, I knew that I wanted to stay at or anything. I got a call randomly one day. I was renting from Chad, and I honestly thought that something was wrong in my townhouse because trying to catch Chad on the phone is really difficult. So I called him back. Of course, he didn't answer. And so, yeah, he called me and he said, "Hey, I heard you were looking for a job." And that's what led me to Old Dominion. And I've been there ever since 2015. Yeah, met my neighbor, and the rest is history.
I think she comes from that same, when you were describing your community and how people help each other, I was thinking, wow, that's Hardy County. I mean, even when we had the fires here recently, mm-hmm. Carrie and I were talking about how jammed up 259 was in front of the fire mm-hmm. station, and people dropping things off and volunteering, and they actually put out something on the Facebook page that they had everything they need. Mm-hmm. And the hot shots that came in from Alabama to help had said, "We've never seen an outpouring of love like this community has had." That's where you both come from.
I mean, it was an easy transition for me from Western Maryland, because I lived in D.C., Arlington area for over 4 years going to college. And that rat race is totally different. And being able to move back and then move to Harrisonburg and kind of find out, essentially, it's really the same type of community, and then meeting Carrie and meeting people in Matthias, it's really, it feels like home. Like, really, it's
home.
Yeah, it's the same feel of community and people helping each other and just being there and listening to the news. You would never think that the world was what it is until you actually just start communicating with people around you, and all that goes out the window because you really just feel the sense of community.
I felt like you were kind of talking about my life when you were talking about you growing up, like that's how I grew up too. And so I so identify with that community, you know, having that community around you. And so when things happen in our life, the community, like Michael was saying with the fires, like the community just comes out and they embrace us. And I've experienced that in tragedy too. So I would be interested just to hear what that was like. Like, tell us a little bit about your experience. I'm at 13, and
it's a long time ago. Days it feels like yesterday, and then other days it feels like 26, 27 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to really reflect on how I felt in that moment, but I've never looked back and thought of it as a hardship, really. Mm-hmm. From day one, I think, and I've had this conversation with Carrie, I've had this conversation with numerous other people, that having a traumatic injury at a younger age seems like almost a blessing than it is later in life. Because once you would get established and have a job and have a family and be used to something and then have it stripped away is totally different than having it stripped away as a kid and not really know anything other than just get at it mm-hmm. and do it. And my parents didn't baby me. They didn't coddle me. It was come home and I was back in school within a month and a half. And which looking back is like pretty impressive, if I say so. Like,
it is very
of all the stuff you have to, I mean, it's like going back to an infant. Like, you have to relearn everything over again. Your life, I mean, I'm paralyzed from the waist down. So, whether it was back surgeries or numerous surgeries, skin grafts, I went through all that while still keeping up with schoolwork. And didn't have to skip a grade or fail and repeat. So I was able to go right back to school within a month and a half. And like, I think that everything's today is going to revolve around community. I had friends and family that supported me and were always there. I mean, the house was remodeled and was ready for me to come home within probably the month and a half or so. And just friends and family that were there to support me and be there. And looking back, I mean, there was definitely hard times that you're in your darkest of days for sure. But I never let myself stay there. And I'll still have days that, I mean, I'd say to anybody that gets injured, like, yeah, it gets easier. It doesn't really get easier. You just get used to it because it's always hard. I just think I make it look easy to those that don't know the day in, day out. Because I still work 40 plus hours a week, still volunteer for numerous organizations. Like, I'm on the go and doing more things than most people that are able-bodied, but on the back end, I'm still dealing with being paralyzed, dealing with insurance companies, dealing with everything that comes, secondary issues that are 10 times worse than not being able to walk. But from the get-go, and I've always praised my uncle for being the one that kind of didn't let me stay in a bad headspace, because my uncle was paralyzed at 16 years old from the neck down, and was, from the time I was old enough to remember, he wasn't able to do anything himself. And it wasn't until years after that I got hurt that I'd found out that when he first got hurt, he was able to use an electric chair by himself and was able to move his arms some and do some things. But after years of just living in that space, he kind of got relaxed and stopped doing it, and then had to have people help him do more and more until where he got to the point that he wasn't able to really do anything other than be in bed. And after I'd got injured, he kind of watched me just not let it stop me and kind of put him back in the headspace of that's who I was. So he, without anybody knowing, he told me years later, like, he'd started moving his arms, like trying to. Mm-hmm. And after months, he was able to get back some movement to where he was able to use his power chair again by himself. And so it was kind of, life can always be worse. And I grew up knowing that. And I knew about paralysis. And a lot of people that get injured don't know anything about it. So it's probably more of a scared feeling because you have no clue. But at least had a little bit of an idea and how much worse it could have been. That I didn't. It can't change it. It wasn't going to be changed. So you just got to live with it and go with it. So it's kind of, at a young age, it was, even though it was tough, it was just, I didn't know any different, really. It was just something bad happened and I had to deal with it. And my parents didn't baby me enough to be, hold me back, because I think that would have held me back a lot more. So
I think the inspiring thing, at least for me, being an active person too and an outdoors person, is all the things that you do. And it's like, wow. I want you guys to know that he has a pretty significant hitch on his truck right now. Yeah. He can pull any trailer. this guy skis, he kayaks, he plays basketball. And my daughter came to me crying not long ago, and it made me think of you. She got stepped on by the horse that we just got, and I was like, okay, well, you know, if you're going to do horses, you're going to get kicked, bitten, stepped on, thrown off, all the things, and you're going to have to decide. And I said, softball's the same. You know, you're going to have strawberries, rip your whole rear end off, your knee. And, you know, Doug plays basketball, and we love to go watch him play because he's a hustler, you know, and the arm strength that is required to do this. And you will get ejected, not from the game, but from the chair, yeah, right?
Yeah, I mean.
And you have to be okay with that, and your hand, your fingers are going to get smashed. Yeah. You have to have a different chair that's a pretty significant expense, I think, but definitely gives you an up in not getting your hand smashed.
Yes.
But you have to make that commitment and to do that. And it's not just you, but your whole team and the other team and the beauty that is in that. Tell us about how you interact with the outdoors still, even though your injury came from
a hunting accident. And I don't even know if I mentioned it. I was actually hurt in a hunting accident. So I was shot, bullet ricochet, totally freak accident that would never happen in a million years again. And the very next year I was back out hunting. We found out that... at the time, there was Polaris that had made an automatic four-wheeler that was all hand-controlled. And it was funny, in a way, because leading up to my accident, my parents were pretty much, no four-wheelers, no, you're going to get hurt, you're going to get hurt, you're going to do this. So wasn't really loud riding four-wheeler and stuff with my friends after I got hurt. That was my way outside. That was my legs outdoors. The first four-wheeler they got me had 12 to 13,000 miles on it within like a couple years. That was my legs to go see my friends. If you saw me between the ages of 13 and 18, it was on a four wheeler, most likely. Yeah. And even in places that wasn't supposed to be, that got me in a little bit of trouble, but luckily it's tight knit community and some pretty cool police officers. But yeah, it just got me back outdoors, and I was back out hunting that year just from the four-wheeler. I can't recall if I was able to do it prior to my injury, but thankfully, after my injury, I found out that I was ambidextrous as far as shooting, so I can shoot right or left-handed easily, which came as a blessing when I'm back out in the woods, because I can't, from sitting on a four-wheeler, unable to shoot around, right? Both directions without making a bunch of noise or being seen. So it was really one of the nicer bucks that I killed right after my accident was actually shot left-handed. And I just lived and breathed the outdoors. Like, even though my accident happened from the outdoors, it was still one of those things that got me through my accident afterward. Just being at peace with nature and getting back out and kind of not letting a disability hinder me by being able to sit outdoors and take it all in. And is one of those things that, even though it isn't a, I feel like it is difficult to get outdoors, it was, again, back to family and friends. That I had a cousin that was, Seth was little at the time, but he was with me all the time. From the time I got on the four-wheeler, I'd pretty much go pick him up, and if I drop something or need something or putting blinds on or help setting stuff up, he was always there. I mean, he was probably under 10 at the time, and we just loved the outdoors, both of us. And
you made it happen.
Yeah,
right?
Made it happen. Mm-hmm. And
that's good.
Favored childhood memories. Carrie, who was it for you that took you outdoors?
My granddad. Yeah. Like, I can remember seeing pictures of, like, being asleep on the four-wheeler, and like, that's how he would put me to sleep when I was little. He would just ride around until I'd fall asleep. So it was definitely, you know, I was outside. Probably not. I mean, I wasn't into hunting like Doug was, but I definitely liked being outside.
So you all went to a monster truck show together.
Yeah, that was our first date.
It was.
Well, yeah, I guess he was. That was a date.
That's quite a date. That's,
yeah.
She had won tickets for
me. Yeah, on the radio.
And so you decided to just...
Yeah, I just send them a message, and everybody at work.
Thankfully, a bunch of people at work pushed her into it.
No, everybody at work kept telling me this is a terrible idea.
There was a few people.
Yeah. And
because we were neighbors, and if it went wrong, that was, one of us was selling the house. So. But it turned out that, 2 years later, that we both sold houses.
So I was actually supposed to do your all's wedding,
yeah,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
And my friend Karen got the honor of marrying you all.
The first time.
Yeah.
The official time.
The official time. During a pandemic, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I remember her sending me the picture. I'm like, oh, that's so awesome. So tell us about your journey together. What's that been like? I know you have had some challenges having a little man in your life, right? Yeah. But let's hear about it.
So fast forward to I don't even know what year it is anymore, 24. So 2018, 19, we started with our fertility journey. Leading up until now, I didn't really know what that was going to be like. I just kind of assumed it was going to be easy.
I think we knew it wasn't going to be easy, but we didn't think it was going to be quite this hard.
Yeah, I was under the impression that it wasn't going to be easy, but it wasn't going to be a big deal. It was a procedure, and we'd be good. But it turned into 3.5 years of just trials and tribulations and hardships and a lot of emotions and wanting to not give up, but just look at other options, just because it got so involved, and you learned so, so much going through the process, that unless you go through it, even knowing people that have been through it, like, we had no idea what we were in for, because we decided eventually to go with IVF, and the first cycle that we had did failed, so we had zero luck at all. So that was very tough. We were almost at the point where we kind of were almost having to accept that there was no biological child. So we'd look into adoption and fostering and all the other options, and kind of, we didn't take a break, but we kind of just sat back and talked and discussed. And luckily and thankfully for our doctors that were compassionate and caring and actually doing what they are meant to do, instead of a lot of doctors that kind of just, you're another number. Our two doctors, I can honestly say that they're almost like friends, that kind of told us that even they thought that the first IVF cycle was a spoof. Like, it was just for some reason that they didn't even know, like, they thought if we did it again that we would have better luck. And luckily,
this was like 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, this was over. We're trying to condense it down, or we'd be here for a couple hours. But because we had considered even donor and what all that looked like and all the emotions that go into that of not your biological child. It wasn't the end goal, but that was something that we really both wanted. And thankfully, we were able to go through a second IVF cycle.
We had a successful IVF cycle in 2022, which resulted in 3 embryos that were frozen. And we decided to transfer one embryo then in July of 22. And we were really, really blessed that that embryo decided to stick around.
Yeah.
And he grew, and it was very, very hard. It was a very, very hard pregnancy. It was, I remember vividly, it's like those vivid memories sometimes that you have. I remember going into our 6-week ultrasound, and only with an IVF cycle do you typically get like a 6-week ultrasound. And I just so remember seeing the flicker and knowing that it was a heartbeat and that noise and like the smell of the room. Like, I remember it all so vividly. And then, I mean, it was hard. Pregnancy was hard. We had many, many trials. We had many things and many doctors telling us that, you know, this could be wrong and that could be wrong, and many, many trips to maternal fetal medicine and many ultrasounds there. And at one point them saying, you know, he could have this syndrome and you need to decide, you know, whether you want to do an amnio and if that would change anything, and you're too far along right now if you decide to terminate. Like, all of those things were thrown at us, and it was so hard. Like, having someone look at you and say those things and knowing that you make that decision, and us having the faith that, you know, I know that there's science, but I also know that we have faith that that it was going to be okay. Like, he was going to be okay. And, I mean, we didn't know he was, it was true at that time because we didn't find out the gender. And going through and going in for a 36-week ultrasound and them saying, it's time. Like, there's no more waiting, and delivering in Charlottesville and having him be in the NICU for a couple of days and all of the complications that I had with labor. And it was really, really scary to being at this point now where he's happy and healthy and growing and thriving and is a toddler. And it's just, it is crazy to think about all of it, because it was a very, very long road.
Yeah.
Very long.
It never seemed like anything that we get into goes as planned or easy. But I think it all goes back to community, too, that from the time you would make a post on Facebook to just pray for him, hundreds, or if not thousands of people sending up prayers for all of his scans, that this could be wrong or this could be wrong, and just kind of have to have faith that everything's going to be good. And hearing all the issues that it could be, and kind of having to just, in the back of your mind, put it off and just know that he's going to be good regardless.
And you were always the one that was like, he's going to be fine, it's going to be fine. Even once he was here, and, you know, we get all of these things, like he could have cystic fibrosis and all of these things that we have to go through.
Yeah,
and
I mean, Down's, and I mean, there were so many issues and complications that they threw at us that he was gonna have or could have, that I don't know if it's probably from my attitude from getting hurt at 13 that
I agree.
Yep. I was going there.
I've never looked on the dark side ever. It's always gonna be good.
Yeah.
Honest, like, and if it's something that we can't change, why worry about it, kind of thing?
God's going to be with you.
I'm a very stress-free person. So I think that balances us out, because
yeah,
she
I agree.
Stresses a lot. But
I was going to go there.
But too. On the same thing, like, she keeps me level as far as I might be overly optimistic on a lot of things, or just don't think as much as maybe I should on some things either. So it kind of definitely balances us out, because I just go with the flow and what it is, and live with it and deal with it. And that's how I've been from my injury on. Like, I think that definitely, because a lot, like when you ask like childhood memories and stuff, like I don't really have many memory before my accident, just because I think that was such an imprint on my life that like I don't really recall running or walking or like any of those things. That it's almost like my life started at 13 when everything happened, and I just look at it like that.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. You've been listening to part one of Doug and Carrie Galica's testimony today. We pray that it's been a half hour of hope for your life. We also pray that you'll tune in next Sunday right here on 1470 AM and 102.1 FM WBTX for part two of Doug and Carrie's testimony. May God bless.
Hope Talks is sponsored by Church of the Nazarene in Harrisonburg, in partnership with Sunshine Ministries.